As you know, last week we finished up our series on the seduction of Christianity, and tonight I'm going to begin a new series. It's going to take one night. I have been rolling around some things that I still have in mind, some things that I believe the Lord would have us do. But for tonight, I'll tell you what has happened. In recent days, I went into one of the local drugstores to get an article of a personal nature. And while I was there, I noticed the things that they were selling for Christmas this year. And some of the names of them, they had a display on one wall that had like, I don't know, 8 or 10 different kids' toys. And they were so ugly and so demonic and so dark that it was just stark. It just hit me, you know. And I left the store, and I was thinking about some of the things that I had read, the names of these things, and then the advertising that is on the packaging to make it appealing to the public. And as I was thinking about that, I thought, my Lord, what are our parents faced with? Our parents were little kids. And what do our spirit-filled parents, what are they faced with in within their families where the grandparents don't know the Lord, or the aunts and uncles don't know the Lord, and where you take your children for the holidays and the family gets together and you're the only one, you know, in that crowd who really loves the Lord and senses anything wrong. And your children are thrown into that, and you try to protect and preserve your children, but it's difficult for you to do it because I wonder whether we have enough ammunition to be able to stand firm in the presence of pressures like that. Now, if the devil comes to the door and knocks on the door and says, here, I got some garbage for your kids, I don't think we have any trouble with that. But where we have difficulty, because we don't have to have an excuse. We just shut the door and run him off. But when you go to grandma's house, or when grandma comes to your house and brings the gifts, and they are some of the stuff that I saw, that gets a little tougher. And how do you talk to grandma about that? What do you say? How do you teach the children? And so as I was thinking about that, a number of scriptures came. As a matter of fact, they just flooded. And then I went back out to the store, and I bought me a little notepad. And I walked up and down the aisles where they're selling the toys and took me some notes. I thought maybe they'd throw me out thinking I was a shopper for a competitive store or something. But I didn't want to... You maybe already know all of this, but I didn't know it all. I mean, I knew some of those things were out there, but I didn't know how really ugly some of the stuff is. So if you already know, you bear with me tonight, okay, while the rest of us deal with it. If you don't, you listen carefully, because tonight, I think, and the reason I felt pressed to do it this week is many of you are shopping. And some of you are answering questions from grandma as to what the kids need or what would be a good thing to buy. And if you think you might have trouble like this, you need to start preparing the ground so that grandma doesn't show up with a bag full of goodies that you can't allow your children to have. And these are really touchy areas, as you understand. And what I was appalled about was the ugliness, the darkness, the evil, the violence, the sex in little kids' toys, and the occult that all the toys and stuff are just rife with this. Some of you may have difficulty even in your own home, and you need to start talking to daddy or mama who doesn't understand the situation. Some of you grandparents who have children who don't know the Lord and don't understand what's going on, while you don't want to nag them, nobody likes a nagging grandmother. I mean, nobody likes a nagging grandmother. They may love them, but nobody likes them. And so that's not something you want to nag about or be preachy about. It won't get the job done. But there are some neat little ways. I believe the Lord will show you some where you can express these things to your children on behalf of your grandchildren. Because if your kids don't know, then perhaps you can help. Maybe you can intercede on behalf of the grandchildren, and the children will listen to what you have to say. Let me take a number of scriptures, shall we, and just go through them, and then I want to express to you some of the things I found. Some of these will be familiar to you. The first one is 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. We hear the Christmas carols all around us and the familiar Christmas music, and the spirit of the season is so beautiful, and our hearts get so big, and we just feel so wonderful, and we pick up the riches ads, and it talks about the season of giving, and we think, isn't that wonderful and marvelous? And we just have these warm fuzzies inside and outside. And we need to understand that the devil loves to take advantage of that kind of a situation and that kind of a mentality, because your guard is down, and then in he wants to come if he can. The 8th verse warns us, be sober. Now the word sober, you can write in the margin of your Bible, means to be alert. Doesn't mean not to be undrunk. It means to be alert. Be watchful. Be sober. A drunken man is a sitting duck for anybody that wants to roll him. Be alert and watchful and sober. Be vigilant. That means don't let your guard down for a minute. Because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, that is, as a dangerous enemy, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And he will use those, if he can, that you are unwilling to say, Mom, we don't allow our children to play with those kinds of toys, and here's why. Because you wouldn't take that from the stranger down the street. But you would take it from your mom, you see. And if the devil wanted to get those things in your home and get these influences in your children's lives, who would he pick? See, he would pick the grab bag at school. He would pick your family members. He would pick the local neighborhood name draw. These are the things that he would use, because you don't want to take a chance on offending somebody. So you'll tell you, it's like somebody that gives you a necktie you can't wear. If you're married to the person, you'll wear it. You know what I mean? Or if it's your mother-in-law, you'll wear it at least when you go to the house. Or if your mother-in-law gives you a painting that you wouldn't put in your doghouse, you take it out of storage when mother-in-law comes and you hang it up in a prominent place. Well, the principle is exactly the same here, you see. The principle is the same. And the devil knows that. And the devil knows that you're kind and tender-hearted and that you don't want to offend anybody or hurt anybody. And he will take advantage of that unless you have your understanding of the matter carefully thought through and know what you're going to do and why you're going to do it and to be able to support it. So we must be sober and we must be vigilant. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 2. The devil is like a roaring lion, and he's seeking whom he may devour. Pastor, aren't you going overboard? I don't think so, and you don't judge this until we're done. Then you'll know. You'll be able to better tell whether we're going overboard or not. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 11. Paul writes instruction here to the Corinthians, lest Satan should get an advantage of us. Now, that tells me that it is possible for him to get advantage over us. Even though we're filled with the power of the Holy Spirit, Satan can get advantage over us if we are not sober and vigilant and wary. For we are not ignorant of his devices. And what the Lord's trying to do with us tonight is to get this across to us so that we won't be ignorant of one of his most popular devices, using the birth of the Savior to pervert and destroy and foul up. Let's go to Proverbs 13 and read the 14th verse. Proverbs 13, 14. The law of the wise is a fountain of life. Now see, there come my own grandchildren, and I'm concerned about them. Now, I'm not concerned that that would happen, but they're so precious. And They need our care. They can't look after themselves. You know, if you just leave them alone, they'll die. If you leave them alone spiritually, they'll die too. 14th verse says, the law of the wise is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. To depart from the snares of death. Now turn to Exodus 23, and let me give you two scriptures here about snares. Exodus 23, reading verse 32 and 3. Now, these are instructions that God gave Moses to give to the children of Israel when they came into the land where they were going to encounter entirely heathen, an entirely heathen culture and civilization. He said, thou shalt make no covenant with them. Last two verses of the 23rd chapter. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, make no agreement with them, nor with their gods. In other words, these things which they worship and serve, you are not to make agreement with them. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. These things that are anti-God have the power to make those that would love God sin against him. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. And then if you look at Deuteronomy 7, it is a restatement of the same principle, but this is even stronger. The other week, I was sitting in a restaurant, and in this restaurant, over in a corner, they had a little television set, and there was a young lad, looked to be about 10 years old, sitting there watching the television set. And it was kind of distracting for me because I was trying to read. I had the Word, and I was reading, and the television was going over there. And obviously, it was one of these violent cartoon occult kind of things. And as he was watching that, he was riveted, just riveted to the television set. He was closer to it than I am to Vera here. And his eyes were just riveted on that thing. When the program went off the air, I noticed all of a sudden over there he was, all by himself in his imagination, and he was making these grunt sounds and moving his hands. I mean, he just looked like a kid possessed. Now, he was only doing what he had observed. But toys have the same power that the television has. And toys, generally children, use toys to make believe. They use their toys to let's pretend. When we were growing up, we had a little wagon, and one day it would be a taxi cab, and the next day it would be an ambulance, and the next day it would be a fire engine, and the next day it would be a police car. I mean, it was a red wagon, but we used our imagination to turn that thing into all kinds of other things. Our bicycles became Gene Autry's horse. Anybody in here remember Gene Autry? Champion. Oh, yes. Some of you may have ridden a broom named Trigger. That's the way kids play. They use articles, toys and articles, and they combine their imagination with it, and then they enter a make-believe world. And children who are fed this kind of thing, entering a make-believe world, are entering the devil's world, and they're making believe in that world. And those of you who know anything about computers, you know garbage in, you get garbage out. And if you put the garbage in the kids, that's what you get out. You buy your child a pair of boxing gloves, and I guarantee you that your child will walk around going like this. I'm telling you, that's what they'll do. They walk up to their buddy and punch him. They come see Grandpap and they punch him. See? This Grandpap ain't into that. Now, you'll have to decide whether you want. I'm not saying boxing gloves are demonic. Don't misunderstand me. The point I'm trying to make with you is if you put boxing gloves on them, you're going to turn them into a puncher. Because this is the mentality. I'm going to tell you what you do if you buy him a gun and a holster. You will turn him into... Isn't this what he does? And you can tell him all you want. Now, you don't shoot people. But he'll still shoot people. When you're not watching, he'll shoot people. When you're going down the road in the car, he'll be shooting cars. I mean, isn't this what kids do? Kids aren't any different today. I mean, it's been a while since I've had them, but they're not any different today than they were in the past. Is that right? They take that thing. They know what to do with that. You buy them a saw, they'll cut the legs off their bed. You know? Yeah. My dad still likes to tell that story about me. He bought me a tool kit when I was a little boy, and I hammered it. And one afternoon, he said to his wife, my mother, he said, "Where's Vic?" Vic. He didn't call me Vic. Call me Vicky. That's my. "Where's Vicky? I haven't seen him in a long time. I don't know. Where is he?" They went looking for him. "Come find me in the bedroom." And I'd already sawed one leg off and working on it. But you know, it's better to have the leg sawn off the bed than to have a kid shoot the dog. Do you understand what I'm saying? And who wants a child running around shooting a television set? You say, don't shoot people, so shoot the television set, shoot the cat, shoot the flower pot and the lamp. I mean, you find some object to shoot. I mean, that's the way it is. You buy them war toys, and that's what they'll do. So you got your child walking around the house like a, you know. Deuteronomy 7. Verse 20. "Moreover, the Lord thy God will send the hornet among them, that is your enemies, until they that are left and hide themselves from thee be destroyed. Thou shalt not be affrighted at them, for the Lord thy God is among you a terrible God and mighty," or vice versa. "And the Lord thy God will put out those nations before thee by little and little. Thou mayest not consume them at once, lest the beasts of the field increase upon thee. But the Lord thy God shall deliver them unto thee, and thou shalt and shall destroy them with a mighty destruction until they be destroyed." Now notice the language here about destroying the enemy, destroying the enemy, destroying the enemy, destroying the enemy. And you can understand, after God's done all of that for us, why on earth would we ever want to introduce the enemy back into our homes? And the same thing is he's done for us spiritually. He's delivered us from evil and darkness and violence and all that stuff. Why should we want to bring it back into the home? Verse 24. "And he shall deliver their kings into thine hands." In other words, you'll be stronger than their strongest authority. "And thou shalt destroy their name from under heaven. There shall no man be able to stand before thee until thou have destroyed them. The graven images of their gods shall ye burn with fire. Thou shalt not desire the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it unto thee, lest thou be snared therein." Now you say, "Pastor, these toys are not gods." But I beg to differ with you. All you need to do is go to the toy store and stand in the toy section and watch the kids come through. That's all you have to do. If that's not a god, and if that's not worship, I don't know what it is. And listen to the children talk up to their parents about what they must have. You'll be snared. "For it is an abomination to the Lord thy God. Neither shalt thou bring an abomination into thine house, lest thou be a cursed thing like it. But thou shalt," now notice this language, "utterly detest it. Thou shalt utterly abhor it, for it is a cursed thing." Now this is very strong and very powerful language. But Pastor, we don't have to be sober and vigilant about our children. Surely the devil's not able to get access to our children, can he? Turn to Mark 9. Mark 9. Yeah, I'm not going to let any pagan gods in my house, but gosh, kids are kids, and these are just innocent things. Thank you. Wrong is right. They are not innocent. They are effective because they appear innocent, but they're not innocent. They're deadly. All right, here's a story in Mark 9 of a man with a child that is demonized. Verse 17. "One of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit." And the boy couldn't talk. "And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth and gnasheth with his teeth and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples so that they could cast him out, and they could not. He answered them and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. And they brought him unto him, and when he saw him, straightway the spirit tare him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed foaming. And he," Jesus, "asked his father, how long is it ago since this came unto him? And he said, of a child." Now see, there's your insight as to whether or not a child can be demonized. He can. This boy had been like this since he'd been a child. And oft times it hath cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Jesus said, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. And straightway the father of the child cried out, said with tears, Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying unto him, notice, foul spirit of a child, foul spirit. Thou dumb and deaf spirit, I charge thee, come out of him and enter no more into him. The spirit cried, rent him sore, came out of him. He's almost like a dead boy. The devil is no respecter of persons. And if you'll allow him, he'll take your children. If he can't take them, he'll oppress them. Okay? Now, let me show you a principle from starting in Genesis 13. I want to show you something from the life of Lot. Pastor, one or two little toys like this, you know, not going to make or break my child. You can feel that way if you want, but, you know, I've seen too much to let you say that without warning you to the contrary. For even if you do not observe the effect, who's to know what your child could have been without that effect? Just because your child, let me give you a natural example, just because your child gets B's in school, straight B's, boy, that's excellent. That's way above average. How do you know that child couldn't have had A's? And just because your child grows up knowing the Lord, how do you know what that child could have done for the Lord and for himself if he hadn't had these influences in his life? Verse 8, Abram said unto Lot, I'm looking at Genesis 13, verse 8. Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. Lot lifted up his eyes, beheld all the plain of Jordan. It was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. And so, Lot saw the most beautiful land, and it was the most popular and seemed to be the best to him. Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan. Wasn't concerned about anything spiritual. It's purely carnal. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan. Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent toward Sodom. Now notice those words. Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent toward Sodom. In other words, I'm going to live in Sodom. He lived toward Sodom, and then ultimately we know he moved into Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. But Lot was a good man. Lot was a righteous man. And Lot's uncle was a favorite of God, Abram. But Lot made a decision, in spite of that, that he wanted to get next to the world. And so he wanted fellowship with these people and these things that were wicked and were sinners and exceedingly so. Now, the first indication we have of anything in his family is in Genesis 19 as to the, The first indication was that Lot's two daughters got him drunk, you remember, and seduced him and had children to him, so on. But this story in Genesis 19, the angels of God are about to destroy Sodom, and they're trying to get Lot and his family out. Verse 14 tells us, Lot went out and spake to his sons-in-law, which had married his daughters, and said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. Now, what had he done? He had raised daughters in Sodom. They had married men of Sodom, and his sons-in-law, daughters, whatever grandchildren he had, were lost in the destruction of Sodom. Now, let's find out how that occurred if we go to 2 Peter chapter 2. I'll never forget the day the Lord gave me revelation on this passage of Scripture. It is like he took a veil away. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 7 and 8. And this passage is describing God's destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and how the Lord knows how to judge the ungodly. And then there's this little parenthesis in here. I start at verse 6. and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto all those, unto those that after should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot. Now, the word just means righteous. He's just as if he'd never sinned, justified. But notice Lot was vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. The word vex, I remember when the Lord showed me this, I made these notations in the margin of my Bible, and they're still there. The word vex from the Greek means to wear down or to oppress. Now, Lot's living in the midst of this wickedness and these wicked activities and wicked instruments that were customary in that city caused him to be worn down, caused him to lose his edge spiritually. Verse 8 says, for that righteous man, notice now this is righteous Lot. This is a good man, a Christian man, in the sense that he was godly. For that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Now this word vexed is a little different word. It means tormented. Now here's what's happened. Because Lot chose to live in Sodom, he was worn down by their wickedness and by their filth and by their sin. And because he dwelt in the midst of them with his seeing and his hearing, because of their unlawful deeds, he was tormented day by day. He knew what was right, but yet these influences were so strong. Never found peace, the man. Never found peace. Now, I believe this is what happens to children who are raised in Christian homes, but who are permitted all sorts of ungodly and demonic and satanic influences in the home and outside the home from other influences. We're talking about toys tonight, but the same principle applies. Television, friends, all of the other influences, you know, peers and so on, that come to our children. Now, this is one of the things. Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 5. And this is one of the things that I have trouble with so many of these toys that are in the stores. They make evil appear good, and they make heroes out of wicked creatures, mutant beings, and so on. If you go into the toy department of the store and then go to the local Turtles, I went into Turtles one day just to see what it was like up here in the shopping center. It was like walking into the devil's den. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. It was dark. I don't mean dark physically. It was oppressive, dark spiritually. I just felt like I had the creepy, crawly yucks while I was in there. I went over to the record rack, and I just looked at the pictures on the records. And this is exactly what we see in the toy departments now. It's the same stuff. The imaginations from which come these graphics and these designs are twisted and perverted and corrupt. And we call it art, and we call those that produce it artistic. See? And we reward them with millions of dollars, billions of dollars, and we make them heroes. And it really is sick. Chapter 5 of Isaiah, verse 20 and 21. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. That's what's happening. I just don't want that woe to be pronounced against any people over whom I would have any influence. So that's why I felt pressed to share this with you tonight. Here are some of the things I discovered, and this might not be new to you, but it is to me. I learned words I never heard before, and I learned about creatures and heroes that I never knew before, and I wrote until I got writer's cramp, and then I just decided to quit. I decided it was enough. I found a tremendous amount in this one category of toy, there are many different types of them, and they involve little figures, different characters, little figures, and then places where you put the figures. Like in my day, and when we were raising our children, you could buy a gas station, and then you could buy cars. and the children would play gas station and move their cars in and out. Now you buy a tomb and buy mummified bodies to put in it, stuff like that. We used to buy airports, bus stations, railroad stations, and you had people, dollhouses for the girls. Yeah, I didn't use the dollhouses, but so I'd be more familiar with these other things. One of those things is the Thundercats. Some of you may have heard that. And this was one of the articles that they had for sale was called a mutant fist pounder. And the advertising on the box said this was an evil, earth-shaking combat machine. And the description of it was that awesome fists of steel smash and pounds as it attacks. So some sort of an attack mechanism that has steel fists that are awesome, and they smash and pound. Now, I want you to notice what the children are being, what is being appealed to in the children. Then I found another thing in this Thundercats deal. There was a whole bunch of it. It was called Mumra's Tomb Fortress. And it was described as an eerie, glowing chamber where Mumra mystically transforms into Mumra the ever-living. Can you see the occult and the demonic spiritual activity going on? It had a large, I was really impressed with this, because it had a large skull transformation chamber. And it got me real excited. If I'd had the money, I'd have bought it. And then much more that I didn't describe. There was another thing that they had which described mutant trapping claws on it. And then I noticed a lot of these figures were advertised with clips so the children could wear them around clipped to the clothing. And I guess that's the latest fad, that your favorite character, you clip it to your clothing somehow. Then I found Masters of the Universe. You familiar with that one? This Thundercats is recommended for age 4 and up. Masters of the Universe is for the more mature, age 5 and up. They had one little thing there. It was called the Evil Horde. And it was advertised as a Mantisaur, which I guess is some kind of a demonic horse, because they called it an evil injectoid steed. And this thing had mighty trapper arms with which to lift the helpless enemies. Then I found an animal swamper, which was some kind of a vehicle. And instead of wheels, it had claws on it. The claws had come out of the wheels. And it was advertised as having automatic power claws. Then they had a little 4x4x4 truck, and I thought, well, yeah, this is great. They have a little truck here. You know, kids can play with the truck. It was called the Renegade. And then they had a whole series of beings under the name Centurions. They had another one under the name Superpowers, and this was advertised as Darkseid, D-A-R-K-S-E-I-D. And then they had another group called Transformers. Now, all of these competitive toys, I could see that there's tremendous volume in this because everybody's got their own stuff. And the Transformers were skilled at evil Decepticon. And then they had Robotech, Voltron, Zybots. This one was the one that caught my eye at first. It was called, if I say the word humanoid, you know what I'm saying? This is an inhumanoid. And it was advertised as the evil within. Then they had all kinds of Rambo toys, which looked to be pretty violent and bloody. And then they had a lot of wrestlers, these wrestlers with their costumes and stuff are really stupid. And then they did a whole deal on ninja, which is the martial arts business. And they had a whole array of weapons. They had daggers and all kinds of swords and knives. And lest the girls get left out, they had a whole thing for the girls called the Princess of Power. And I looked at a couple of them. And this one, they had She-Ra. And then they had Cat-Ra. Now, Cat-Ra is a jealous beauty. You see what that features, the jealousy and so on. And she transforms into a cat. And this Cat-Ra, she was really remarkable because she had a scratch action waist. Now, I don't know exactly what that means, but it was advertised as, I looked at the thing there, and I guess the kids would know what that meant because they probably demonstrated on television. But it says a scratch action waist. And so I assume that's some sort of a device. And then I thought, do they sell dolls anymore? Doll houses, and they do, and there are some, you know, some nice ones. But most of the Barbie dolls had were featured with bathing suits that were cut like this. And then they had a, this was neat, they had a fashion doll set, which is a 66-piece dinner date set, so that the little children could play date, you know, have dinner date and so on with their dolls. And then I found some interesting games. Now, there were some good games there, but I found this game that you might find interesting. This is a Murder, She Wrote game. And reading from the box, I read, the game is murder, and the players are the pawns. One player is the murderer, who stealthily attempts to silence witnesses, cover tracks, and elude capture. Suspicions run rampant. Deception is the strategy. And so this is the kind of thing that children will be thinking about. Of course, you know about the Dungeons and Dragons and all that kind of stuff. And I, you know, could go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. The things that this whole Star Wars business, you know, has come from the Eastern religions and the Zen Buddhism, the E.T. toys. I didn't see any of those, but I know you've seen them in the past. I didn't see any of the Smurfs. The Smurf thing was, you know, was real popular. And, of course, Papa Smurf's a wizard. He casts spells and mixes potions and all that sort of thing. I didn't see Cabbage Patch dolls this year. I'm sure they're around, but they're not as... That's an incredible... that whole thing is incredible. We kill the real babies, and then we adopt these plastic ones. It's incredible. I noticed that G.I. Joe was adding some occult characters now to his things. You know, Starriers, GoBots, board games, Thunder Barbarian, Magic 8 Ball, Monster Mansion, Krull, Dragon Master, Dark Towers, Dragon Lords, Towers of the Night. Just one thing after another after another. And these were the themes that I saw typically. First of all, I saw the occult in most all of that kind of thing, all the popular toys. Now, there were the old timers. You can still buy some blocks, and you can still buy some balloons, and you can still buy bicycles and things like that. But all the stuff that bears the big price and the heavy moving stuff, which is heavily advertised on television. In the paper last night, they had interviewed some local merchants, and the manager at the Walmart store says, what sells is what's on television. Doesn't matter what it is. If it's on television, I stock it heavy because it sells heavy. And there's tremendous influence on the kids. And what they're advertising heavy is this occult business. And the problem with the occult situation is it sets the kids up for the real article. It makes them curious about these things. It makes them open to them. It makes them believe that it's all make-believe. And they think that all of this stuff is make-believe. And then when they're confronted with a real article, they don't find out it's make-believe until they're hooked. Deuteronomy 18, we'll not turn to it, but the 9th through the 13th verse, yes, we will turn to it. Let's read one verse anyway. Deuteronomy 18. Somebody here tonight may not know this passage of Scripture. We'll not read all the verses because of the time constraints, but we'll read the 10th verse of Deuteronomy 18. There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or daughter to pass through the fire, or that uses divination, or an observer of times. What would that be, an observer of times? Astrology. Or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all that do these things are an abomination unto the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord thy God doth drive them, that is the Canaanites, out from before thee. So if you want to have the same inheritance as the Canaanites, then do what they did, and you'll find God opposed to you rather than on your behalf. The second thing I notice is that in addition to the occult theme, is that the more evil the toy is, the more popular it seems to be, and the more imitators it has. And what this does to our children is it sears their conscience against evil, and it trivializes wickedness. It makes wickedness appear to be trivial and unimportant and of no consequence. And the children are seared in their conscience against the fact that God hates this and that it's detrimental to me personally. And the children develop hero worship cults almost over these evil personalities. I can remember on one occasion some members of our family in another part of the country. We had gone to be with them at Christmas, and the boys had the Darth Vader doll. And it was, just everywhere they went, they had the Darth Vader doll, and it's all they talked about, the Darth Vader this and Darth Vader that. And I never even heard of Darth Vader until I saw that. But I took one look at him and knew that I was further ahead than he was, you know, and having not known anything about it. But what the kids do is they imitate these evil personalities, and they admire them. And in their imagination, they take on these evil personalities, talk like them, act like them, grunt like them, and identify with them and see them as heroes and as positive role models. And that, I think, is very dangerous for our children. Romans 12:9 says, abhor that which is evil. Abhor. Now, to abhor means to hate. That means to not permit it, not to have anything to do with it. 1 Thessalonians 5:22 says, abstain from all appearance of evil. If it looks evil, stay away from it. If it looks evil, stay away from it. The third theme that I saw throughout these toys, the new toys, is this fetish on darkness. Most of the characters are black, dressed in black, dark colors, weird color combinations, stark kinds of things. And in the games feature caves, lairs, tombs, graves, cemeteries, all sorts of dark things, places which is dark. And what this does to our children is it insulates the child against the natural protection which is in him to have a fear of dark things. When your children are born, something you have to teach them oftentimes is how not to be afraid of a dark room. I mean, children are never afraid of light, but they're often afraid of darkness, aren't they? And there's a natural protection there that when all the boys decide, let's go down to cemetery, see what's going on at the cemetery, your boy won't go because he's got a natural fear of things that are dark, natural hesitation. When I say fear, I don't mean phobia as much as I do a protective hesitancy to be involved in those kinds of things. But when the children grow up with these influences, then it insulates them against that natural protection, and then they're quite open to all kinds of dark things. Ephesians 5:11 through 13 instructs us to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. And it goes on to describe that light exposes darkness. We're light, so we ought to let the light in us make things manifest and clear, and not to play around with the things that are in them. It's not even good to speak of those things which the evil people do under cover of darkness, that passage says. The fourth theme I saw was violence, and lots of it, and big doses. And what that does is hardens the child's natural softness and natural compassion. Children have a natural tenderness, generally. They have a natural softness towards things hurt. There's just a compassionate nature to children, generally. And that hardens them, this continual exposure to violence, killing, clawing, ripping, smashing, pounding fists. Over and over and over and over and over again in the cartoons and in the toys and on the boxes. And when the children get into their imagination and they become these perverted and corrupt and dark characters, they use language like that and motivations like that. And that's why you see when the kids are playing with each other, that they're talking to each other like that. And it's make-believe, and adults think it's cute. But it's not cute, it's deadly. It is deadly.
the more bizarre the violence and the more ugly the violence, the better it seems to be. Lots of blood, lots of blood. Murder, killing is just part of the package. And it's not like when you read the Batman cartoon, it genuinely is a comic. I mean, you would get the words, you know, on the, I'm not saying Batman, you know, something you ought to have, but I'm drawing a comparison because I want you to see how things have moved. When you read Batman, you read crash, zap, crack, but you knew it was comic. Do you know what I'm talking about? You knew it was a comic. These things aren't comic. These are designed to envelop the children and to get them totally involved in what's going on. They're very realistic. It's not make-believe. I mean, it's make-believe, but it's much more than make-believe to the children. Galatians 5, 22 and 23 tells us what the fruits of the Spirit are. And if I remember correctly, they are love, not murder. They're joy, not torment. They're peace, not agony. They are gentleness, not violence. They are goodness, not hurt people. They are meekness, not power. And they are exactly the opposite. If you will read from Galatians 5, 19 through 23, you will see that when the works of the flesh are described, you will see that that's what these toys are. They just manifest all of that only in ways that you and I don't even imagine exist. And you see precious little of anything that would encourage peace on the part of the child, or goodness on the part of the child, this is what will happen to you. It's maybe happened already. If it hasn't, it will. If you decide to take a stand on this for your children, you will get, oh, come on. You've gone fanatic. You've become fanatical. This is just play. The kids are just playing. But the playing that's going on is not innocent. Is dangerous, and you will have to take, if you decide to stand anywhere in this area, other than just allow everything just to come along, just run right through your house, if you decide to take a stand anywhere in this area, you're going to take some flack. I mean, you're going to take some flack. You'll take some mocking and you'll take some flack, but you'll raise good kids. Hebrews 12 and 14 says, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. I want my children to see the Lord. Yes. And they're not going to learn peace by playing Thundercat and Princess Power. And then I saw the theme of sex. I didn't see that as strong in the young children's toys as I saw the occult, the evil, the darkness, and the violence. There are some sexual themes, but they're not terribly strong from what I observed. They're much more subtle. In some of the girls' toys that I was describing earlier, some of the games as they relate to TV kind of personalities, that sort of thing. So you want to watch for that. Now, if those are the things that are negative, what kind of alternatives are there? I mean, what can I get for my kids? We want to provide something for them for Christmas. What kind of advice can I give the grandparents, the aunts and the uncles? What can I encourage them to do? What can I buy for other people's children? Children seem to genuinely prefer and benefit from the more simple, inexpensive toys that stimulate their natural curiosity. Now, that seems to not make sense because I told you that the most popular toys with these violent, occultic, evil, dark toys. And you'd have the right to say, if children generally prefer and benefit the most from simple, inexpensive toys that stimulate their natural curiosity, then why are they buying so much of this? And the answer is, it's being advertised and they're being manipulated. Children respond to advertising the same as you do. And why do you think these cartoons are so popular? And why do you think the toys simulate the cartoons? And why do you think that the cartoons are filled with toy commercials? Why don't they advertise cereal? Because the children are not going to press you to buy cereal for them. But they will press you to buy these toys. And the children are manipulated by the advertising and the marketing the same as adults are. And that's the reason you have this tremendous pressure coming from the kids. A child that does not watch the television programming will not be pressing you for these kinds of toys. But if the children are watching the television or if they are playing with other children who are pressed in this area, then you're going to get the pressure for these kinds of toys. Do they still sell blocks? Do they still sell Play-Doh? Do they still sell Lincoln Logs? Do they still sell Lego? Do they still sell erector sets? Now, those are things that kids can play by the hours with, and they can play for generations. Our grandchildren are still playing with our children's Lincoln Logs when they come over to the house. They don't ask us, grandmother, well, get out the Thundercats. They don't know anything about Thundercats, see? But they will say, a little Vic will say, Grandpa, get out the Lincoln Logs and build something with me. And little Sonny will say, can I make a puzzle? And she'll get out the little puzzle with the airplane and she'll make the puzzle. And they're just happy, you know, just like a tick on a dog. They don't know they're deprived. They're not. They're not deprived. Do they still make, so, you know, those are things, those are creative things. And they help, they really help the children develop. They help the, you know, the fine motor skills and so on. So if you buy kids these kinds of toys when you send them to kindergarten, we don't have to do remedial things on them. Because they learn. That means they learn at your place how to do fine motor things, okay? We don't have to teach them how to hold a little piece that goes in what's the little tinker toy? They still make tinker toys? Yeah. Children ought to know how to do that time they come to kindergarten. But many of them don't. But boy, they know the names of all the slop toys. Amen. See, all these dark toys. Do they still make bicycles, wagons? They still make footballs, basketballs, soccer balls, hoops, so on? That develops the child too. And of course, lots of activity there and bodily development. They still make baby dolls? Do girls still like to play with baby dolls? Sure. If you don't buy them baby dolls, they're going to be pressing you to have babies. Because little girls want to, that's what they want, isn't it? A lot easier to get them baby dolls. Cheaper too. I priced them. They still make trucks and cars. You can still buy good Tonka trucks and Fisher-Price trucks and cars and things like that. And kids love those. And I'd much rather have the children going, I'd much rather have them do that than going, you're dead. Now, they're going to do one or the other, aren't they? And don't you think that it's more healthy to roar like a car than to crash like a rifle? They still make some good board games that are challenging and intellectually stimulating for the older children. Just the other day at our house, little Vic was over, spent some time with us, and I was amazed how much fun he had out of a little hatchet I had out chopping on a log while I was splitting wood, just all afternoon, just chopped there. Boy, Grandpap, we are working hard, aren't we? Aren't we really doing hard work, aren't we, Grandpap? Bang that thing away. He said, this is man's work, isn't it? Yes, this is man's work. Ladies don't do this kind, do they? But the whole afternoon, just with an axe, you know, a little hatchet. We went in the house, and he got one of his grandmother's pots, put on his head. And it reminded her of his father. We have the photograph of, I read somewhere the other day that pastors ought not to use their families as examples. But I'm doing it anyway. We had a colander, you know, that you strain spaghetti and vegetables with. And it had handles on it. And it was very pretty. And Vic wore that when he was just a little one. Get in the kitchen, you know, and pull all the pots out on the floor and work them, you know, wear some of them and put them back in. You know, you can't cook in a Tonka toy. So you get double duty out of these kinds of toys. But here's the point I'm trying to make. Children don't need these $25 things that are going to influence them in a negative way. They don't. Kids love old boxes. Love, or a refrigerator box. There you go. There you go. Yeah. Thursday at Sears is refrigerator box day. And if you don't want a big box like that, just get a small box. It's incredible what they'll do in the box. And one day it'll be a house, and next day it'll be a dog house, and next day it'll be a bathroom with a shower in it. And they'll get in the little box. The kids will come over to our place, and they'll pick the toys all out and put them on the floor and get in the box. It's crazy. They play by the hour in the box. Now, why should we buy them Darth Vader when they, you know, when they'll go in a box? Lois took an old cardboard box and she put some, we had some extra wall covering from the dining room, and she just wall covered the box and made a toy box and put it in a corner. Kids come over and throw the toys out and get in a box and just have a ball. So the point is that there are still lots of good toys that are made, and positive ones and productive ones, but you're going to have to, if you don't understand it yet, you need to get a hold of this. You're going to have to take an active role in supervising what your children do. You must supervise who they play with. You supervise what kind of entertainment they have. You supervise what kinds of music they listen to, what kinds of toys they play with. And then when they get to be 14 years old, it won't be a problem for you or them for you to help them in the choice of their friends, to have an influence in that, because they'll be accustomed to your guidance and accustomed to your influence. Okay? Now, let's look at Galatians just a moment, and I want to show you something that's going on inside your child. We must finish here quickly. Let's see if I can do this in a couple of minutes. I'll just give you a couple of scriptures here, and we'll not read it all, but the 17th verse says of Galatians 5, "For the flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary the one to the other, so that ye would, cannot do the things that you would." Now, you know, of course, that this is happening in your children too, don't you? And you know also, of course, that if your children are 5, 6, 7 years old, they don't know that that's happening. They don't understand that. That's why they have you. You do understand it. And so, in choosing our toys, be sure we choose what ministers to the spirit rather than what ministers to the flesh. Toys have a spirit about them. Kids will act like the toys they play with. And if toys do have a spirit about them, then the kinds of toys you choose will have an influence on your children. And you can either make them more carnal or more spiritual. Now, there's some great Christian toys out, too, by the way. You know, if they want to play with heroes, masters of the universe, get them a little David thing. The Heroes of the Kingdom, I think, is the name of that. We Win Toys as a company is making Christian toys available in lots of different places. There are companies that are making specifically Christian toys. But I want you to be careful that you don't get into a situation where we're just making, instead of Darth Vader, we have Goliath. And so don't, just because it's a Christian toy and you buy it in a Christian bookstore does not make it a toy that ministers to your child's spirit. So you be careful about that. And the Lord will give you a sense of it. You walk down and just pick the thing up. Look, you can sense the spirit that's on it. You can sense that. If you're walking in the spirit of God, you can sense the spirit that's on that thing. And if you feel badly about it, put it away. If somebody buys your child a toy and brings it over or sends it in the mail from Michigan for Christmas, and you sense that that thing is not right and you can't deal with it as far as the sender is concerned, then you make sure that toy finds its way into the lost barrel. I mean, you know how to get rid of a pet, you know, that you want to unload, or how to get rid of a toy that, you know, or how to get rid of the blanket that the child's using for a security or something. I mean, you know how to take care of that. Do toys the same? Yeah, but she paid $22 for that thing. $22 is a poor price. Send them the $22 if you care that much. But $22 is not too much to pay for your children's spiritual health. Make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Romans 13, 14. Make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. And Galatians 6, if you might be right in that area, let me read two verses for you.
Verse 8. Verse 7. Let's start at 7. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. That means what you plant in your children, you'll reap in them. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. And he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And so what we plant in the children or allow others to plant in the children is going to determine what's going to be reaped there. You must be careful whose house you send your children to. To play. What kind of toys the neighbor kids are bringing into your yard or into your house. I realize that a lot of neighbors will think you're screwy and may even ostracize you. But you'd be surprised how the Lord may use that in helping some other families if you'll walk in love with these people and not be condemning and not get up on your high horse and walk haughtily and proudly in this area, but just express yourself. Oh, you know, I never thought about that. You know, there are a lot of denominational Christians out there that do not have the insights that you do and would benefit by some of these insights given to them in the right spirit. Okay? All right, verse 9 says, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we will reap if we faint not. Now that tells me that raising children, rearing children is not something that you do overnight. And don't be weary. Don't quit. Don't say, this isn't worth it. I'm not going to do this all these years. I've had enough of it. It's too hard. The pressures are too strong. Don't you do that, because your children's lives are at stake. Their spiritual life, certainly, and perhaps even their physical life. I told you one time or other about one of my cousins who got running with the wrong crowd and jumped out of a hotel window in St. Louis and killed herself on drugs and all that sort of stuff. And, I've seen these things firsthand, and nice girl, nice family, but dead in her early 20s. At best, these kinds of toys are providing resistance to and hindering the development of the character and the spiritual qualities that you want to develop in your children. That's the best you could hope, is that they would just be resistant to what you're doing. At worst, they work to destroy your child, his peace, his joy, his healthy perspective, his chance at a full and happy life. Play is not simply a diversion for the child. Play is a learning experience. Every play experience that your child has, he is learning something. And so you don't just get him out of your hair with this diversion. If you allow that to happen, listen, it's a lot easier to have babies than it is to rear them. I've said that over and over again. I'm going to keep saying it because it's true. It's a lot easier to have them than it is to rear them. And I know when you have, I mean, even one, two, three, four, five, you get a house full of children, it's very easy. You just get weary in well-doing. And you say, would you kids just go, I don't care what you do, but just go do it. Just get out of my hair. And so we put them in front of the television set. We send them to the neighbor's house. We invite some kids in. We allow them to go to a party that we know somehow is just not right, but we need the afternoon off. Once you have a baby, the time to make the choice is the time you have intercourse. Or actually in marriage, when you get married, that's when you make the choice. But once you bring that baby into life, You have a responsibility for that child until the child's on his own. And we have no right to abdicate that responsibility. We don't have that right because we're accountable to the Lord for that. Certainly, we're accountable to ourselves. And in the long run, we'll be accountable to the child, because the day will come, he will understand what happened in his rearing. The same way you understand, the older you get, don't you understand your mom and dad that much better? Don't you think back over the circumstances of your life? Some of you are deeply regret the kind of upbringing you had and the way your parents did. Others of you are becoming increasingly thankful. The older you get, you're realizing how wonderful your parents were And the older, just the older you get, and especially as you have children of your own, and you see that, the more appreciative you are. So parenting is a 24-hour a day, 7 day a week, 365 day a year job until they are on their own. And then you still have some, you know, obviously some influence and some concerns there. But at least in those formative years, you have a responsibility that just cannot be abdicated and it cannot be transferred to anybody else. Can't do it. So we will stop right there. I had wanted to open the floor up tonight for some comments, perhaps some things that you all had observed, yourselves, but we just not have an opportunity to do that tonight. Watch everything. Care Bears. Care Bears. Oh, those innocent little things, their latest character's a wizard. You got to watch everything. Because the people who are developing these materials do not have the same values, do not have the same basic set of values that you... I'm not talking about they're not Christians. They don't have the same set of values. They're going in a completely other direction. And they have absolutely no concern for your children. Absolutely no concern for your children. I'll tell you what they're concerned about. You got it. The same way with the rock singers. They don't care, concern about giving entertainment to your kids. What they want to do is make money. Money, 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 and have fun. Gratify their own lusts and their own perverted desires. Don't you think anybody cares for your kids like you do? All right, let's have everybody up, please.